Molly and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Two balls and two strikes to Yoan Moncada. Did he go around? Foul tip hung on to, and that's going to wrap it up. For just the fifth time in an 18-year career, Oli Perez has recorded the save. A most unusual ending to a most entertaining night of baseball on the south side of Chicago.
This one hurts a little bit. They all hurt, but this one hurts a little bit because these guys really battled today. I thought, like I said, Lucas did a great job battling through it. You know, we ended up taking the lead, then they end up taking the lead, and then, you know, Matt comes back and does a little damage, and we tack on a run. It's 3-2, and we're going deep into the game. It was a really good ball game, just one we wanted to be on the right side of.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Our thanks to ESPN for the highlight. Didn't enjoy that broadcast. Please, God, don't let Steve Stone ever doing his job. We are delighted to welcome Steve to the program. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Oh, my God, Stoney, I missed you so much last night. I'm not saying the result would have been different, but certainly it would have talked me through it a little bit. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing Steve. Okay. I don't think anybody knows a particular team better than the broadcasters who do it on a daily basis. And Jason and I were both watching it, and we watched it unfold and watched, I think, the most unfortunate part of a game that went the other way was the rain delay came in because Brad Hand just didn't have it last night. I mean, you could really tell that if he stays in a game, I believe that the Sox are going to win that one. We hit Hand pretty well in Cleveland. We were certainly approaching him very well last night. And then the unusual rains came. Oliver Perez comes out of the bullpen. He's 100 years old, and he makes some good pitches, and it's over. But I think, boys, what last night showed is that this Sox team, although greatly improved, if they don't make some critical plays in the course of the game, if they don't play a relatively clean game, it's going to be very difficult for them to beat a good team. They will beat up some mediocre pitching. They certainly will outpitch a few of the teams, but if they can't defend them, and there was a few plays that weren't made that could have been made, and
right.
that eventually did the boys in. So you know, I agree with Ricky in that the team came back. They battled. I mean, they made it quite a ball game. They retook the lead against a really tough Shane Bieber. In a situation where they needed to make a play, they didn't. And there was another factor, I think, that was critical in the ball game. You've got Grandal playing first base. We know that he's a catcher. You have a guy, and I mentioned this when we first started the series, you have a guy up in Delino DeShields who has bunted his entire career. If you go back and look at his body of work, he's one of the guys that will bunt when he gets an opportunity to do it. I think that because you have a catcher at first base, and I know Yasmani has played first base before. I'm not saying that he was, you know, totally out of position. What I'm saying is he's not an everyday first baseman. I think you pretty much have to play him in on your doorstep. And if DeShields is going to lay down that bunt, you have to force him to try to lay it down to third base. It's too easy to push bunt up the right side. And eventually, that was one of the key plays of the game.
Steve, Evan Marshall was very good this year. Last night just didn't have it. It just made me, I know it may not be cause-effect, but it just reminded you or underscored how much the Sox are going to miss Aaron Bummer, however long he's out. That was, of all the injuries, may have been the toughest one just because of the progress he has made and his value to that bullpen.
Like David, I know occasionally you look at my tweets, and a couple of days ago when it happened, I felt of all the injuries the Sox have had, and I tweeted that I feel Aaron Bummer was the costliest. That was the one that will have affected the team the most, because very quietly, and I say quietly because he's not a surprise here in Chicago, but nationally they haven't heard about Aaron Bummer quite as much as they will. He was one of the best left-handers in the game of baseball. And certainly when he came in, he restored order into any situation he came in. He was a wonderful bridge to get the ball to Colome. He also took a lot of pressure off Evan Marshall, who's been terrific. I mean, you know, look, it's unrealistic to assume he's not going to give up any runs anytime soon. Marshall made a bad pitch to Franmil Reyes, and it cost him. Reyes is a pretty good hitter we've seen, not only a slugger, but a guy who's got very good plate coverage. He got careless with one out over the plate, and it cost him the tie in the ballgame. But still, even after that, the boys were in a position to get it done, and they didn't. The play at third, Moncada got twisted around. He could have made a play. He didn't. There were some things that the team has to do that they didn't do. And somewhere along the line, I think, and this is, look, it's a configuration of a lineup that you're going to have to live with. This team's going to strike out a lot. You've seen it. We've seen it early. Yet they play, you know, they play good baseball, good enough to be 500. They played some good teams. Obviously, Minnesota's a very good team. The Indians, they've had two series against them. But think about striking out 11, 12 times a game. That's pretty much what this lineup, the way it's configured, is going to do. If you strike out 12 times a game, that means 4 innings, you make no contact. In 4 innings of a 9-inning game, you're guaranteed not to be able to score because you can't put the ball in play. Again, go back to the loss of Anderson and the loss of Madrigal. Very few teams thrive when your double play combination, who's just going to come together, is out. That's where they find themselves. And consequently, you have a lot of guys who don't put the ball in play. And 4 innings of every game, approximately 4 innings of every game, there is no contact. And I think that's one of the problems. And, you know, again, this is not the finished product. This is the fourth year of a 5-year stated rebuild. And the lineup will change. It will look a little different. But right now, no contact is really hurting.
When you look at the number of injuries, Steve, and, you know, particularly the pitching injuries, is it the wrap-up time? Is that what's the problem? I mean, I'm hesitant to think about anybody coming in who's had Tommy John surgery, because we've seen what happens when guys come in. And, I mean, look, I'm sure they're reaching down to Alabama to try to pull out their best pitch and fire it. It's hard not to when you're coming up and the adrenaline's flowing and you haven't been able to deal with that before.
We have a 6-week spring training in a normal year, and this year is anything but a normal year. They didn't have their full spring training when this game was shut down on March 12th. That's number one. Then when you come back, and I understand the philosophy of everybody involved, You came back, the negotiation to actually come back and play was longer than it could have been. And so when they came back, the spring training or summer training or whatever you want to call it was just under 3.5 weeks. That's not long enough. So my feeling is, and again, one of the things that I cautioned people about was that with an accelerated summer training to something that had been shut down and then laid off of for the better part of 4 months, you were going to have pitchers whose arms don't support the incredibly high spin breaking balls that everybody is employing these days. And that's one of the reasons, not the reason, but one of the reasons why we're seeing just a literal plethora of injuries to pitchers. And it's not only arms, it's legs. And if you have some leg issues, you're eventually going to have an arm problem. I think the history of baseball is littered with pitchers who have hurt the lower part of their body only to then see the upper part of their body start to give way, because you're all working in sync. If the legs are strong, the lower part of the body is strong. And if you think about it, guys, the biggest muscles in your body are from the waist down. And so if that can help support your pitching motion, the arm has to do less. When the arm has to do more, because the lower body isn't quite in as good a shape as it would have been with a normal spring training, I think you'll see more injuries. So, again, this is an extraordinary year. This is something I hope we never face again, because you're seeing the result of what happens when you have a situation where everybody wants to come back and play the game, but it was much less than ideal in the run-up to actual meaningful games. And you're right. Guys can't go out there and protect themselves. You can't protect yourself pitching to major league hitters if you're a pitcher. You have to go out and give it everything you have. Your body doesn't know it's not prepared, but it tells you when it breaks down.
Steve, the White Sox offense that we saw be explosive very early in the season now has scored 10 runs in its last five games. What has the league done to catch up the White Sox hitters, and how do they counter that?
Well, one of the things the league has done is schedule the Cleveland Indians against our boys. They have exceptional starting pitching. They have some guys out of the bullpen who are very good. But when you're facing the likes of Bieber and Plesac and Savali and Pletko to a certain extent, and Clevenger, I don't think that we've seen him, but when you're facing that rotation, you're just not going to hit a lot. They're one of the best pitching staffs and certainly starting rotations in baseball for a reason. They're awfully good. So I do believe that you get away from Indians pitchers, you'll probably hit a little bit better. That's number one. Number two is you have a lot of guys who are very anxious, and I think you see it occasionally, and maybe it's all reflected in Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu, if you look at the history of the last few years, he is in the top three in guys from the seventh inning or later driving in the tying or the go-ahead run. He is a very good clutch hitter. However, this has been the pattern with Jose. When the team is not doing it offensively, Jose tries to put everything on his shoulders and get it done himself. That leads to a huge strike zone. That literally leads to a nose-to-toe strike zone with every slider and curveball down and away. He's going to try to put it in play and drive home a big run. But he's proven conclusively that he can't do it himself, because when he expands his zone, he strikes out quite a bit. So you factor that in with Eloy, who was swinging it really well before he took a couple days off after diving into the seats. I don't know what happened in there, but he hasn't come back swinging it as well as he could. He will. Moncada is back and swinging it pretty well. I mean, he also had a late start because of COVID. So this team is just, right now, they're just not getting it done. I assume this team is going to hit. I think they're really good. I think they're really going to produce. But put Anderson and Madrigal back in this team. Get these guys back together again. Maybe make an adjustment. See to it that McCann gets a little more play. I think the best that can happen is, for me, again, not Ricky or anybody else, for me, McCann having his bat in the lineup, primarily catching, and Grandal with his bat in the lineup, because it's a pretty good bat. Grandal either as a DH or as a first baseman, or do whatever you can, but it's nice when those two guys play together. I really like McCann behind the plate. I think he knows our guys real well. It's not Yasmani's fault. He's just coming to this team to get to know these guys. But, you know, there are certain things that that you know when you are familiar with pitchers. There's certain ways to get them out of situations that maybe somebody else can't. I think right now McCann is really familiar with all of these guys. Obviously, Giolito started to come to prominence with McCann behind the plate. I think we see when McCann does catch him. And Yasmani can catch him well. He's done it already this year. I just think it's a better thing with McCann back there. And we've seen personal catchers. I mean, Steve Carlton had a personal catcher. That was Tim McCarver. There are guys historically who have personal catchers. It's not necessarily a bad idea.
Steve, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you, and can't wait to watch a proper broadcast again.
Okay,
thanks,
boys.
Steve.
Well, it's going to be tonight against the Tigers, and let's see if the boys can bounce back.
Got a good feeling about this one. Maybe I'm wrong, but I got a good feeling.
Okay, have a good show.
All right, Steve, bless you. That is Steve Stone. Gosh, I mean, you know, I think he knows who the sod father is. I don't know if that counts, but it's kind of important if you like the team.
That's a low bar. That's a low bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, the most famous man in baseball, but I'll just call him Boozart. What are you going to do? And believe me, I've been a man known to put together some booze art. I get very creative after I get a few in me, as you well know. All right. Help. It's Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767. We got some really interesting news. on college football. We'll get into it next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
The White Sox have one of the best ground screw guy in baseball, Roger Bozard. He's been there since 1983, and he is the best in the business.
No, they're dragging him in now. It's just there's just no chance. You just can't pitch in this.
The real answer is nobody knows. Only, you know, with the pandemic and numbers rising across the country, we don't know. I think it was significant that they were able to put the schedule out. And the way it's laid out, as you just heard, you played the clip from Kevin Warren. There's a lot of flexibility in that, and you have to be nimble during this time. And with the schedule, the way it's set up now, it at least gives the Big Ten an opportunity to try to have a shot at having a college football season.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That was Howard Griffith on with us last week. Great conversation with Howard. And boy, I'll tell you, looking at what we're seeing out there, David, there's a tweet, from the Dan Patrick Show. Dan Patrick was told an hour ago that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 will cancel their football seasons. The ACC and the Big 12 are on the fence, and the SEC, get a load of this, is trying to get teams to join them for the season. So
yeah, I saw that.
Not a shocker.
Not a shocker, but I don't think it serves a really intelligent purpose here. I don't like the lack of uniformity in the approach. I understand why some people will have different viewpoints. You have to respect where everybody's coming from. But I think when you talk about a sport like college football with its traditions and with what it means in different campuses and towns, you want to have everybody on the same page. It just doesn't seem compatible. It doesn't seem smart, Molly, to have the SEC operating in sort of a rogue fashion here and going against what the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, two very different geographic conferences, are choosing to do, the responsible thing to do. And I understand why players want to play. I understand the movement here. But I would hope that somebody in the SEC would have, you know, the wisdom and the perspective to take a step back and say, what are we doing here? We're going to go it alone? That makes even less sense than everybody going and playing a season, you know, beginning in September. I just don't understand. I understand this, but I don't like this because I think there's got to be all for one type of mentality here.
Yeah, it's very difficult to sit here and to talk about the lack of uniformity in it because it really does underscore kind of the lack of uniformity that we have in the country. And the fact that this has kind of torn through different parts of the country in different ways. The fact that we're trying to let states make their own decisions and we have no larger voice to whatever the program is. The fact that, you know, we're living in a time where there are so many things going on and people are desperate and there are some bad things happening in this world. And certainly we saw some awful things happen overnight in Chicago. And I do not want to connect that to college football, but I can't help but feel that that for whatever reason, we are not in this together. We are as divided as a nation as I think I've ever seen in my lifetime. And the divisiveness is loud and it is resonating and people are growing desperate, but there's no excuse for criminal behavior of any kind. And I think that I just think we're in a really bad place in this country, really bad. And you saw it reflected in what happened overnight here.
No doubt. I mean, what's going on in Chicago overnight is scary. It's wrong. And by the way, it's criminal. It's criminal behavior here. This is not in the name of anything except for, you know, looting and criminal, what they want to get. It's not in the name of any movement or cause. It's just that's insulting to any movement or cause. So that is scary. And it's just people who are trying to exercise, I guess, they're right. They are desperate. That's the right word for it. And people are more willing to maybe go to great lengths to express their independence, if you will. But I don't make a connection to college football necessarily, Mully, because I do think that, you know, they are still this is about doing what's right for other people and for younger people. And there's got to be, I think the verb that Sean Frazier used was adulting. And somebody in the SEC or the ACC or these programs that want to play a college football season, there has to be more adulting going on here, because this isn't about, it can't just be about the bottom line. And that's a big part of it, because there's so much money being lost here and so many budgets being slashed. But you can't sacrifice these players' safety and their health in the name of the almighty dollar. It's not a business proposition, bottom line. There are business things to consider, but it's not the NFL, not yet.
No, and I think that, again, I think that when, you know, I'm not making a comparison between college football and what's happening in this country, but I do think that we need a uniformity to the way that we try to solve issues. And right. And it seems like we are heading in one direction, but there is a group out there, the SEC group, that basically they're making a pitch, hey, Ohio State, hey, Notre Dame, hey, Clemson, why don't you just jump on board with us and we'll just have a super conference and we'll do it for 1 year and get a national champion and no one can question it. That's what it sounds like to me. And the reason right. they're doing it is because they're looking for it's a financial decision as much more so than it is a well-being issue. And it is there's a certain, you know, denial's not just a river, right? There is this idea that, hey, we could pull this off. We'll just do it together and we'll cut out everyone else and we'll be laughing at the end of the year and we can split a giant pot. What is that?
It's concerning and it's wrong and it's greedy and it's all those things. But I think what's equally troubling, and you're right, they're trying to poach teams for conferences. And I talked to a guy that I know who's a Mid-American Conference administrator over the weekend, and telling me about how the best players on these MAC teams and programs have been contacted, you know, kind of third party or semi-directly about their willingness to come play for a bigger program this year and to find out some if they could still enroll and what the ramifications for the eligibility would be. That's even worse, because it's one thing to try to poach a team, but another try to, you know, influence a, you know, a 20-year-old impressionable, you know, student athlete who sees an opportunity here and leaves his program to try to jump on somewhere else without any certainty of anything, because who knows what's going to happen. But it's all very troubling, and it all is just people acting very selfishly, kind of with their own self-interest, without looking at a bigger picture. And that is reflective of the way things have gone in 2020, the year that can't end soon enough.
Yeah, I you know, I've got to tell you, the more that you go through your life and the more you're watching what is happening, I had to drop my son off yesterday, and I'm driving home, and I'm you know, I usually listen to a couple of different stations, and I ended up on the Bob Marley station, and they were playing the song War, which I don't know if you're familiar with that song. It is a speech by Haile Selassie that they put to music. And I got to tell you, it is a very powerful song, and I think people need to listen to it and understand exactly what he is saying and how long this has been said. And I think you got to put everything into that context. And I understand that people are very upset and there are things happening in the world and it hasn't changed. And we're all getting, you know, frayed as we go through this thing. And there are some, you know, economic realities connected to it. And you know, I get it. I understand what's happening, but you can't start rioting. As much as that might be the language of the desperate, as much as that might be a way of people trying to not just act out, but all that's going to happen is all the stores that exist, they're not going to be there anymore. You know, the response to looting is going to be to close people down that are trying to to make a dollar for themselves and for their families. And I don't know how you open a store. I don't know how you, and I mean, I get it. Some of them represent giant corporations and who cares about them, but what's going to happen when all that is gone? Then what, right? It's not, there's no solution through criminality. It's just not there.
Yeah. And they're giant companies and they're giant, you know, corporations, but everything is affecting, you know, it goes down. It's not those people that you're hurting. It's not those companies that you're damaging. It's the people that are running those stores, the people that work there, the people that won't be able to work, the restaurants that are shutting down, the bars that are shutting down. It's just, it's a very convoluted message, and it's the wrong way to send it. And it's not in the name of anything, you know, profound or meaningful. It's not something that you would put to music. This is criminal behavior, and it can't end soon enough. And that's what happened overnight in Chicago. And hope everybody can stay safe and down there, because it in downtown, it just looks like the worst may be over. But what a night it was, starting a little bit after midnight. And I just hope that we're not going to go through this again. It just seemed like it was over, but I don't know what triggered this, and it seems like police could have been, you know, the criticism now will come for the police and the politicians and what they could have done to prevent it. But it's just sad overall.
Yeah, it's just awful and really just upsetting. And, you know, until the philosophy which holds one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned, everywhere is war. Bob Dylan. Great song. Give it a shot. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Here's a long clip shot. Broken up by Kent. He tries to get it out. What a play, Nurse, to keep it alive. Neal to Nurse, the shot. He fired it wide. Hawks win. Hawks win. The Chicago Blackhawks have won a series for the first time since the Stanley Cup Championship of 2015.
Bring on the Golden Knights. That great clip of the week, presented by Great Clips. Great haircuts at Great Clips. It's going to be great.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. There are a lot of lonely nights in Vegas. We all know that. And taking them on in Edmonton will be fascinating. And again, I think that it's hard not to think about the goalkeepers involved in this particular matchup, since one of them was here. And again, they got a pretty good player in Fleury, Marc-Andre Fleury. I hope that he plays, frankly, because I think Robin Lehner is a really good player. But did you see, I think it was Pierre LeBrun wrote a column in The Athletic where he talked to Stan Bowman. And Stan said that basically what has happened with the restart for the Blackhawks, and again, we can argue all day about whether they deserve to be a part of it or not, but they, as a 12 seed, beat a 5 seed, and now they get the number 1 seed for their troubles. Stan says, and I'm quoting, "For these young players, I think this is going to really accelerate the progress. We've been making progress this year. Maybe it didn't appear like it was as much as some people want, but I think this is going to play a huge role. Now these guys understand what we've been talking about and why the details matter. All the things that coaches harp on during the year, they're seeing it firsthand, and there's no substitute for that."
That's the bonus of this extra hockey. It is everything you wanted it to be from the Blackhawk perspective so far. You have given these young players the exposure to the postseason intensity necessary to beat a team like the Oilers, a talented team with a great 1-2 punch, but they had to rise, they had to raise their level of play and performance and execution and all those things. That's good for guys like Strome and Nylander and Kajula, DeBrinket even, guys who haven't been there before. For the guys who have, it felt very familiar and it felt very normal. And we're used to seeing Kane and Taves. And by the way, Patrick Kane is yet to get going, but I think that might be in this series. But Keith and Corey Crawford, who steadily got better, and in game 4 more than any other time in the series, reminded us why he means so much to this team, why he gives the Hawks their best chance of upsetting the Golden Knights in Vegas in this series. I think it's going to be a tall order, a tremendous challenge, but I haven't decided yet, but I wouldn't count the Hawks out. And the only reason I say that I need to think more about it is because Corey Crawford is a guy in these situations that you have come to trust, and he's rewarded that.
Yeah, Kirby Dach is another guy that when you think about guys that have made an impact, and guys that have changed since you came back, and their role has changed, and it was interesting because Stan spent some time just complimenting Jeremy Colliton on the way that he has handled him this year.
That's a good sign, and it sounds like if you're Stan Bowman, if we had any question at all about his belief in Jeremy Colliton, I don't expect there to be a change. And it's because a lot of these young players, as we have established time and again, the Hawks have the youngest team on paper in the playoffs, and these are guys that are only going to get better. This is going to make them more seasoned next year. When you figure it's going to be a more complete team, you need more out of guys like Strome, Kajula, and Nylander in this series. They were a little bit overwhelmed, it seemed, at times. You need Adam Boqvist to be more dependable, reliable. Kubalik is going to be a guy that they have come to count on. He was really big in that first series. And you're right about Kirby Dach. He has benefited from the time off. He looks stronger. He looks leaner. He looks just more confident as a player. He's only 19, but this is another big moment for him. I don't know, Molly, who to give the edge in goal to. Robin Leonard's going to be motivated. It's going to be on his mind. Is that a positive or a negative? Because as we've seen, he can play really emotionally. And when things are on his mind, doesn't always play well.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I hear what you're saying, but I'm hoping that Corey Crawford, who we saw improve over the course of the first round series, I'm hoping that continues. You know, I hope that what we saw from him in four games is there from game one and maybe improving game two, game three. I mean, it's a much more difficult task to get past Las Vegas because of the depth that they have, because they can, roll multiple lines, and because they'll play defense, which Edmonton couldn't do. And again, Edmonton has two better players than Las Vegas, in my opinion. But the Lonely Knights have more depth, and they can come at you in different ways.
I love the Lonely Knights. I love that. I don't know if you're being pejorative or if you're being like negative or what, but it's just
I just
the
locked
Lonely
into
Knights.
It. I'm not calling like them that. The Golden Knights. I'm calling them the Lonely Knights. I don't know how often you've been to Vegas, but depending on things go, let me tell you something. Can be a sad reality there. You understand?
Yeah, I do understand. Yeah, they definitely have more depth than the Oilers, and it's going to be more than just a two-man show that you have to shut down if you're the Blackhawks. I wonder what effect this will have on the Hawks' momentum or confidence or just the danger factor of them being the eighth seed now that has nothing to lose. And playing with that kind of mentality can be really effective in hockey. And there is not going to be any home ice advantage for anybody. You're playing under the very unusual circumstances. So I think it'll be a pretty even series. I'm not sure. We'll have to talk about our predictions tomorrow, because I think the Hawks can look at themselves and watch the tape and think they have a shot because of Crawford and because of the way that they can score with their primary playmakers.
Well, as I told you this morning, some of the life lessons that you learn from the White Sox, some of the horrible things, life's unfair, people leave, you can, love someone and they won't love you back, the evil over good theory, all that is so much more apparent during a lonely night in Vegas than even watching the White Sox on ESPN. So I'm hoping that they bring that philosophy, that negative philosophy I'm talking about the Lonely Knights. They bring that to this series, and they are a broken team, and the White Sox finish them off.
Are you connecting the Lonely Knights, the Golden Knights, to the White Sox in some sort of karmic way?
As disappointed as I felt by the White Sox, that's how I want. And that's what happens in Vegas, in a lonely night in Vegas. So here's hoping they bring that to Edmonton.
I see it. Everything comes full circle. This is your full circle Monday. Yeah, that's right.
David, I'm always – it's a theme I like to carry through and then wrap up pleasantly at the end. Did you see Pat Forty on Twitter? He reveals that, according to his sources, the vote for the Big Ten to continue or to call off the season, let's put it that way, is 12-2 to postpone, and the only dissenters, Iowa and Nebraska, they want to play. So maybe they – do you want Nebraska in the SEC? Does the SEC even bother with that phone call?
Nebraska, Mississippi State, that's a rivalry unlike any other. I understand why Iowa and Nebraska, that you can see why they would probably feel that way. You know, I did some research over the weekend and look at how not only to these campuses but these communities that are going to be missing out in college football. In the Lincoln area and the Nebraska campus, every football game that they have, every football weekend, is a $12 million revenue hit for the local economy. And so that's what they're also going to be missing. So I can see why they would want to be heard, but just doesn't make any sense. 12-2 is pretty overwhelming consensus in favor of postponing in the Big Ten, if indeed that's the vote.
And David, I mean, look, I understand the financial impact, but let's say you play. Let's say that you manage to have a season. There are going to be no fans involved, right? I mean, if we're talking about postponing the entire season, you would imagine that if they're going to play, it would be in the bubble and it would not be with a bunch of people in the stands with them, not even a limited crowd. So I don't know.
Was it Nebraska? Yeah.
How's the financial impact there?
Well, was Nebraska one of those places that was suggesting, you know, a kind of a reduced capacity? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to bring fans into a stadium, onto a campus that have no reason to be there except for to watch a game. Not this fall. It just doesn't seem, you know, we should be further along. We should be, you know, better as a country. We should be better equipped to handle some of these things, but we're not. And that's the reality. People can either face it or be in denial. But we're here because we were not disciplined as a country and didn't do the right things early on during this pandemic. And so here we are dealing with the consequences, one of them being postponing the college football season, which I think is the right thing to do.
I talked to a friend of mine who was complaining that this could have been done a long time ago. That, you know, why get the players up and running in the way that you have? Well, I think they're trying to buy time. I think they're trying to put everything off until decisions are made when you have to make them. And there's going to be some big decisions coming in the next couple of days. All right, want to thank everyone involved in the program. Thank you for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
It means a lot to us. Our thanks to our executive producer, Dustin Rhodes.
Roger Bozart.
Our thanks to our maven of sound, Kevin Zipak.
He stinks.
And Ray Diaz is a man that we always thank because we love him so much.
Thanks, Ray.
And I got a long memory.
Hey, happy birthday to Mary Mulligan, 15 years old.
Yeah.
My youngest child, what a great kid. Couldn't be a more delightful human, and it makes me feel like there is the possibility of good things in the world. Thank you, Mary. You have pulled our family together. Happy birthday. And Dan is going to have Anthony Heron on at 9:40, so make sure you stay tuned for that. It's Mully and Haw. David, have a great day. Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score.
Segment brought to you by Door Systems, now offering touch-free doors. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it is.